Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello folks, I'm Ewan McTeer and welcome along to a bonus edition of the La Liga Lowdown podcast. Later in the show I'm going to be talking to Kane Zavani of Manager Madrid about the Real Madrid loanees and how they're doing this season. But first of all, we have to get into the big Real Madrid story of the week, of the year, of the decade maybe. Real Madrid's exit from the Champions League in the last 16. First time that's happened since 2010. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Robbie Dunn of AS. Robbie, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Ewan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So you're in the office at the moment. What's the scene like there? Everyone a bit frantic. I'm sure there's people still drying their eyes, no?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, everyone's just kind of accepted at this stage. It was the kind of result that was that shocking to this point. It was almost unbelievable. And people, it was almost the two extremes. Under Zidane, it was unbelievable. The three wins, when nobody expected them to get to the final and win it, and then now getting knocked out by Ajax after bringing a 2-1 lead into the second leg, which came on the back of those two defeats to Barcelona. I think it's just been a bit of a surreal week almost. I think it's safe to say that.
Yeah, I think so, because I mean this was built up for both Barcelona and Real Madrid as a sort of decisive week, decisive month of their season, and I think I probably, like many people, expected that both of them would win a couple of these games and nobody's season would be completely decided in a positive or negative sense, but it has happened like this, and there's really nothing now for Real Madrid to focus on in the next few months in terms of on the football pitch, is there?
No, absolutely not, and that's what I thought when I was just thinking back on it. I'm not entirely sure what my thoughts were heading into the three games, but I was sure Real Madrid would get a result in at least one of the games. They scored one in three, they conceded three, four, nine, or eight, sorry.
It's hard to keep counting, it really is.
Yeah, but I mean, when you think, and I know that this is, as humans, we fit the narrative to suit what happened, and we work back, we retrofit it, but when you look back at Real Madrid's form, I mean, he would have had a close eye in that Eibar game when they got beaten 3-0 and they were dismantled. So, and I understand that Clásicos and Champions League, the form book goes out the window, as the old cliche goes, and I understand that Real Madrid have the kind of players that can show up in any given 90 minutes. But when you look back at that CSKA game where they were manhandled at home, Eibar, they were well beaten. This wasn't a fluke. They were played off the park by Real Betis. They got lucky, I guess, against Levante. Beaten well by Real Sociedad, and these aren't teams that are going particularly well in the league or have any spectacular players or anything like that, but against you always felt if Real Madrid came up against a side that had a tactical system in place and believed in themselves to implement that system, they were going to get, maybe not embarrassed like we saw last night, but it was very plausible that they were going to get beaten like this. I guess it, just the fact that it happened in such an emphatic fashion, I think we were all surprised.
Yeah, you make a good point there when you talk about some of the teams that they lost to and how these are teams with a clear tactical identity. Eibar certainly the case with that. Levante have interesting tactics. Real Sociedad were well drilled under Imanol. Girona as well have been playing the same way for a good couple of years now, even having changed coach. So Yeah, it is a lot of teams that when they have a good tactical understanding, they can frustrate Real Madrid. So that maybe brings us on to Santiago Solari and his sort of tactical concepts in these games. Does this really show up badly for him? And what does this mean for his future? Surely, although he's got a contract for another couple of years, surely he's gone in the summer now, if not sooner.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that he has gone in the summer. I've seen reports, obviously, in Spain here saying he's gone. He's history. It's about Florentino Perez's move next and what he does. I think in terms of Solari's future, I'm not entirely sure what it does, really, because did he have that much of a future to begin with? It's catapulted him onto a European and international stage now. He's managed Real Madrid, and you can, regardless of what that defeat against Ajax says, he's managed Real Madrid's first team, and he was landed in a very difficult situation. And I find when I was reading and listening to the analysis of the game afterwards, there was no, and this is understandable, as I'll explain, I think it's understandable that the analysis was a little bit all over the place, because there is no one particular reason why this has happened. There's so many
nuances to it, isn't there? It's not all the coach, because we saw with Lopetegui when he got sacked, everyone maybe assumed that you remove Lopetegui, everything gets better. It didn't, and that just kind of proved that, as you're saying, it wasn't just the coach, was it?
No, absolutely. It's just like any success and any failure. There's loads of different reasons, and I think Real Madrid, particularly given the structure at the club and Florentino Perez's power, that and the fact that Cristiano left, Zidane left under the circumstances he did. But I also think that Solari isn't free of blame. Like we said, and it's not necessarily about hard-headed decisions he made. He was a little bit out of his depth, maybe. We saw, for example, against Girona, and speaking about the tactical systems and things like that, Eusebio brought on Chucky Lozano and moved Porto out to the right, completely confused Real Madrid. Marcelo was caught out at the back post for the second goal, and Real Madrid just lost. Sergio Ramos went up front trying to get a goal in the last minute, and it was all just very basic. So I think, well, Solari isn't, the blame doesn't fall squarely on his shoulders. I don't think he's blame-free either. So, yeah, as the analysis, I'm sure more will come out in the coming weeks as to what was going on behind the scenes with Bale and Modric, why he was tired, and Cruz's lack of form and things like that. But for the moment, I think it's just all a big blur.
Yeah, a big blur with everybody getting a little bit of the blame. And one of the guys, I guess, that is not getting blamed for his performance on the pitch because he wasn't on the pitch as Sergio Ramos. He was instead up in the stands filming a documentary that's coming out. That'll be a good episode to watch, I'm sure. What do you make of this whole yellow card drama? Because it was silly in the first place to talk about forcing that yellow card in Amsterdam, because he would have missed the first leg of a potential quarter final. Now he missed the first leg of, as you actually joked about last night, a potential Europa League group stage game, but a Champions League group stage game, you'll miss that. But it was a bit arrogant, was it not, in the first place, to assume that this tie was over with a score just at 2-1 after Ajax had played so well in that first leg? No,
I didn't know if you were going to say it or not, but that's exactly the point that I would make, is that Ajax were by no means out of the tie, and only for Real Madrid's burst in the last maybe 20-25 minutes or during the second half of that game with Benzema's goal, they were played completely off the park. And this isn't a player like maybe someone like Reguilón or someone who has a direct replacement. If it was Reguilón who had got the yellow card, maybe you wouldn't lose that much. But this is Sergio Ramos, the heartbeat of the team, the captain, the leader in the dressing room, the man who they rely on and have relied on so often, and for him to go and get and I guess these kind of things, I suppose, happen in football and behind the scenes, and strategic fouling and strategic cards and things like that. But for him to do it at that point and to go and to do it so brazenly, there was a video caught and it was shown on Spanish TV here of Ramos looking over and asking Modric, "Will I get the card? Will I look for it?" And you would think that Real Madrid's form at home they'd have enough to guide them through, but Nacho, his form has fallen off a cliff this season, and he's been really poor. He was poor again last night, and I just think now especially given what's happened, I think Ramos does certainly look really, really silly. But he is a little bit of a... Someone with that kind of confidence is a little bit of a Teflon Don in ways. Nothing really sticks to him. If that was someone like maybe, I don't know, Luis Suarez, and he's got his own history, or Diego Costa or someone like that, Griezmann, for example, this would be front page news. And I get the fact that within a context, Real Madrid defeat Ajax is the big news of the day, but Ramos having the documentary, and it's just highly embarrassing for a lot of different reasons, you know.
Yeah, and I guess maybe in the coming days, once the immediate reaction to this game settles down, other people will talk about this Ramos yellow card and things like that, so maybe that is still going to come out. One sort of final thing I want to ask you about is, we saw a few injuries in that game which impacted Real Madrid's performance in the game itself, but also going forward. You know, they've got a very a very boring, I would say, fixture list coming up at the Bernabeu. There's not much for fans to get excited about, even in the few league games that are left. But one cause of excitement this season has been Vinicius Junior, and now that he's torn ligaments in his ankle, he's not even going to be there. How big a blow is this for the player himself and for the club?
Yeah, it's massive, and I guess given the fact that he had played, that was one of the things I actually wrote about it last week, and it was one thing that Real Madrid said that they were not going to do, was to place all the burden on him, but he's 18 years of age, and he became absolutely everything for their attack. And I think, as I said, and as we were discussing there, Real Madrid have a ton of issues to deal with, and that's certainly one of them. The fact that every single burden fell on Vinicius' shoulders just shows the poor planning and the state of their squad and the state of the morale and motivation within that squad. I think, yeah, as you said, Real Madrid's fixture list, you know yourself, living in Madrid here, and you go looking for tickets for Madrid games, not all that easy sometimes, and Classicos and things like that.
It might be a bit easier, in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and I know, I remember I was covering one of the earliest games when Ronaldo left, and it was the lowest attendance in the stadium for years, and I am sure they're going to probably beat that record in a bad way in the next coming weeks, and I think, yeah, it's turned now into the only thing I will say is that they have a couple of months now to figure things out, and Florentino Perez, Zidane dropped that bombshell when he left last season, and he had to go searching for someone World Cup year. Now they've got loads of time, and in ways that helps Florentino Perez, but it also leaves him wide open for criticism. If he doesn't get his managerial choice right and implement his strategy, we could hear those cries for his resignation getting a whole lot louder in the coming months and at the start of next season.
Yeah, there were a few of them last night, and yeah, he's got a big decision to make. You're dead right with that. So it's going to be very interesting over the next few months, and we'll need to pay attention to all that's going on at Real Madrid. It's going to be fascinating. Robbie, I know you'll be on top of all of it. Where can people find your work, find what you have to say on it all?
Yeah, I post everything I say, and most of my thoughts go on my
Twitter.
Hopefully
not all
Robbie
of your thoughts, not what you're having for breakfast
you're going to bed. I saved that for Instagram, you know. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter there.
Perfect. And you've got a book out as well. It's not very much to do with Real Madrid, although they do play Rio in a couple of weeks. Where can people find that book as well?
Yeah, it's actually a link on my Twitter account, so pretty much anything you need to know about me, go to my Twitter account or send me a message, and I'll get back to you on that. But yeah, there's a link on my Twitter account, and you can find it there.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much, Robbie. After the break, we've got Kian coming up on the Real Madrid loanees. Some happier stories for Real Madrid fans after a bit of a crisis week for them.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to part two of this podcast. I'm with Kian Sabani and we're on a train in southern Madrid moving into the centre. We've just been to see Leganés against Levante and we've just seen quite a few Real Madrid players. We saw Oscar Rodriguez on loan at Leganés and we saw Borja Mayoral on loan at Levante. Both of them starting in this game, both of them having quite an impact. Kian, how are you?
I'm great. It was a nice bonus to get both of them start the game because you never know with Mayoral. Oscar's a given with, I mean, he's playing game in, game out under Pellegrino and he's playing well, but Mayoral is kind of hit or miss because he may come off the bench for 5-10 minutes, touch the ball 5 times and really do nothing noteworthy, and then he'll have the game against Celta where he scores and gets an assist. So, but it was a bonus to get both of them to start. Didn't get the trifecta of Andre Lunin.
No, we were hoping we would see him, but also not, because that would have meant an injury to starting goalkeeper Ivan Quayre for Leganés. We didn't see him, so I'm just going to ask you about Lunin. He's went on loan to Leganés. Oscar has went on loan to Leganés. Mm. From what you're saying, Oscar's loan has been a big success. He's had lots of playing time. He's developed as a player. We've seen him play in many different roles in that midfield. You never quite know where he's going to be on the pitch. Lunin, no, this hasn't really been a loan move that worked out. Especially, I mean, in the Copa del Rey, these were the matches he was playing, and one of the teams he faced was Real Madrid, who he wasn't allowed to play against. So can I just ask you to rate these loan moves for Oscar and Lunin? They've been quite different.
Well, vastly different. Lunin, it's been a disaster because he's a promising keeper. And, you know, while his signing came out of nowhere over the summer, when fans did some research on him, looked at some of his clips, and, like, this guy's really talented. He has really good reflexes. He just hasn't played. And a lot of that has to do with, obviously, that Ivan Cuellar has been great this season.
Yeah.
And a couple times that Lunin did come in, he looked a little bit shaky. I would say it was... he was a little bit cold, but he also did have moments of brilliance where he had a couple of brilliant saves. Overall, it hasn't been good. And when you send out a player on loan like that, I think you have to be sure. And, you know, case in point was Mayoral, who we saw today, had a similarly disastrous stint when he went to Wolfsburg from Castilla. Yeah. So it hasn't been great for Lunin. But, you know, he's young enough and he's promising enough that
he'll surely get another loan, and hopefully Real Madrid have learned some lessons and we'll find like a more suitable home for him. And I guess with goalkeepers, it's always very hard because if the other goalkeeper plays well, you can't play in a similar position, but out of position you just can't play.
Right. Yeah. And like with Oscar, I mean, I think it's just been amazing to see how far he's come since Castilla, because you and I have talked about this quite a bit, that, you know, like there's actually quite a few Castilla players, not only for Real Madrid but also throughout La Liga, who have surprisingly done well. And I say that because with Castilla, they never looked that good. For example, Oscar last season with Castilla, he actually didn't look that good under Solari. He was more promising under Guti in Juvenil A, where he played a lot. He's a really dangerous player. He kind of had really a good knack for dribbling in tight spaces, good playmaking, obviously very good at set pieces and shooting. With Castilla, all that kind of disappeared. He never really had that influence. He had a lot of poor touches. And so, and then when he first went to Leganés, if you remember the first two games, he actually wasn't even in the squad for a couple of them.
Yeah, it took a while to come in. Yeah,
and he was, you know, we'd see him in street clothes, you know, just in the stadium, not even getting in the squad. So it was like such a surprise to see him when he finally started. And around it, there was a turning point where he started. Pellegrino started trusting him, gave him a bigger role each game, and kind of like his role has shifted and morphed quite a bit. And he has a free role now, as you said. There was a turning point also against Barcelona in Butarque, if you remember, where Leganés beat them. He was great that game. And around that time,
extra
and ever
motivation.
Since then, yeah, for sure. I mean, I joke about this, but it's also half serious that if you have a Real Madrid player on loan in your team, you have to play him against Barca because they always play well.
Things will happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's done fantastically well. I think at Leganés, Mayoral is doing okay at Levante, and Lunin we don't know because he's not really played. But let's move on to a couple of the other players who are out on loan around La Liga.
Yeah.
Teo Hernandez is one of them at Real Sociedad. He's had a lot of ups, a lot of downs. He's had some very good performances. He's had some quite poor performances. He's had a lot of non-performances as well because of suspension. I think it's about 4 or 5 games now he's been.
That's right.
He's missed through various bans. What have you made of him after having one season in the Real Madrid first team, didn't go to plan? Now he's back in the Basque Country where he had so much success at Alaves. How has it gone for him at Real Sociedad?
Well, that 5-game suspension you speak of came off the back of a really ridiculous red card. That
lots of arguing.
He just lost his head. And in those 5 games where he was absent, Kevin Rodriguez stepped up. And then, even though Teo was back after those 5 games, he didn't start right away because Kevin kind of just kept
his
place.
He's been playing well in that time, yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, it's been up and down for him. And I've, you know, he's had good spurts, but his season has kind of been like Sociedad's, up and down. You don't really quite know what version you're going to get from him. Defensively, he hasn't looked good as recently as this weekend against Atletico, where he was directly at fault for a lot of just Koke getting behind them.
Well, anyone who goes up against the legendary Juanfran is going to have a hard time.
This is true. But also maybe like because you think Atletico don't have those traditional wingers, that he could breathe a bit, but Koke gave him a lot of problems on that right flank. So he makes bad decisions defensively. What he's done good in, I think he's been a really good ball carrier out of the back, where he can get the ball in a deep position and just dribble it high up the pitch like really quickly and get Sociedad in the counterattack. Overall, I think he's been disappointing, if I'm being quite honest, and like, you know, we're going to talk about him maybe at some point in this podcast, but he probably is the player I'd rank, I guess, the lowest in terms of Real Madrid's fullbacks on the books. And Achraf Hakimi, who's a natural right back, has looked great at left back this season, better than Teo has, so.
No, he really has. Yeah. Well, let's keep Achraf Hakimi to one side just for the moment and talk about the final guy out on loan in La Liga. And that guy is Raúl de Tomás right here in Madrid. He's been awesome, I think, in my opinion, for Rayo Vallecano. 10 goals in a team that basically has left him very much isolated up top. He's already in like the top 10 all-time goal scorers for Rayo after being there, getting them promoted last year.
That's wild.
They play whatever system they played, and they've changed it a few times this season. He's always been very isolated, yet he still manages to create his own chances. You've talked to me a bit before about how he gets so many shots off in a game, and most of them are because he's made these shots himself.
Yeah. That's one thing that has just been so impressive about him is that, you know, Rayo have good pieces attacking, and they're not consistently going to create. And especially in the second half, they seem to have this knack of kind of fading in games and getting tired. But, you know, they create the occasional chance through, like, you know, someone like Alex Moreno, who's been dangerous on the left flank, or Imbula's dribbling or something. But for the most part, he doesn't get service. And I think what's most impressive about him is that Rayo can do nothing all game, and he can touch the ball maybe once all game, and that one touch is a goal.
Yeah.
So he doesn't. Some strikers will get cold in those situations. He seems to actually thrive in it somehow, where He won't see the ball, but and he'll create a chance out of nothing, and he'll, you know, he'll dribble past a couple of players and put in an improbable long distance shot, and it'll go in. It's impressive. He's a strong player. He can dribble, presses really well, hounds defenders. Been really impressed with him.
And do you think long term he's the kind of player who can play at Real Madrid? I mean, we've just spoken about how he doesn't get much help in attack. He's often left isolated. Obviously, in Real Madrid, that wouldn't be the case because he'd be in a more attacking team. He'd have other players around him. He'd have to try and work with other players of his own team inside the penalty area. It's a very different situation for him. Do you think it would work? And do you think, like, how would you compare him with Mariano, who's right now the sort of backup striker for Real Madrid? How does he compare to him?
Lately, I've talked myself into the idea of Raul de Tomas being a Real Madrid striker off the bench, which I don't know if it's actually a realistic thing to think about, because
We can all dream.
But like, you brought up Mariano, and Mariano to me was a better striker in Liga in last season than Raul de Tomas is in La Liga this season. And Mariano's almost disappeared under Solari, and didn't get much under Lopetegui too. I mean, there were some injuries involved, but he never really got that many opportunities. So that part, you know, just taking that into consideration, I think that Raul de Tomas is going to be a really good striker. But I think maybe his ceiling is somewhere like Sevilla, maybe. I think he'd do great at somewhere like Sevilla, Valencia, Villarreal, those kinds of teams. I don't know if Real Madrid is where he ends up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what decisions are made in the next summer. And one of the decisions is going to involve Kovacic at Chelsea.
Yeah,
it's very complicated based on their transfer ban. We don't know how the appeals and all that kind of thing will go. We don't know if they'll be able to sign him if they want to. We don't know if he'll have to come back, if he'll go somewhere else. What do you think? Because last season he was often the first midfield sub to come on. Other players have stepped up this year. We've got Fede Valverde improving. Marcos Llorente has made several good performances in a row. Is there a place for Kovacic at Madrid? In my opinion, I would say there's less of a place for him now in Real Madrid than there was when he left in the summer.
I completely agree. He's more expendable now than he was.
Right.
And I don't think Real Madrid wanted to lose him out on loan in the summertime, because I think he's a very, very good squad.
He was quite purposeful himself in his comments and saying, "I want to go in there."
Yeah.
He kind of forced that through. He forced their hand a bit.
He wanted to start, and he was never going to do that consistently anyway.
Modric.
And Kroos, and Lopetegui definitely was a fan of Ceballos and Isco, and you know, can play Isco in midfield if needed. So there was a lot of depth in that position, and there still is. And that depth doesn't go away magically this summer unless there's a mass exodus as rumored. But the thing with Kovacic now is he finds himself in this weird situation where he wanted to go to Chelsea and he still seems to want to stay there despite actually losing his place in big games often to Ross Barkley, which is just crazy to think about. Because Ross Barkley, I've watched enough of Chelsea this season to know that he really does not provide much.
Yeah.
And Kovacic is clearly the better overall player.
Seems to be Sarri's favourite substitution.
Yeah, it's been done.
It's messy. And then the transfer ban just adds an extra layer on top. We touched on Akraf at Dortmund. Let's go back to him for a moment. I'm going to be honest, I've not seen much of him, but I do remember him tearing Atletico Madrid completely apart. As a left-back, he has played a lot of time at left-back and not at right-back. What has that been like for him to try new positions?
It's been amazing to see his versatility, because he can play at left-back just as well as he can at right-back. Some would argue he's better at left-back. I still think his natural position is probably a right back, but he can play a left back just fine.
It's an interesting one. And then the final player I want to ask you about is, I don't know, maybe the most unique case, Martin Odegaard. I mean, this guy moved at such a young age, had all the pressure in the world applied on his shoulders. I never got the sense at Castilla that he was in the right kind of division for his talents, playing against full-grown adults in the third division, in a division against players who have played at higher level. Now he's in Holland. He's playing first division football against adults, but now he himself is one and can hold his own a bit more.
Yeah.
What have you made of him?
I'm just really glad he's starting to get recognition.
Yeah.
So much focus has been on De Jong and De Ligt in the Eredivisie. I don't know if people slept on Odegaard. I think there's been this narrative also that...
Are you trying to tell Barcelona fans that Odegaard is better than De Jong?
I'm not saying that. Keep an eye on that for him. You know, with the thing is that Odegaard's playing against the same players that De Jong and De Ligt are.
That's true.
And he's been phenomenal. He's been Vitesse's best player. He's grown more and more into the team. Like, at first, he wasn't very involved, His teammates wouldn't look for him as much, but he's grown into the role. He's earned respect. He's been phenomenal.
How has he been as a sort of leader? Because I think we can all appreciate he has fantastic talent, and it just needs the right situation for that to come out. But one of the things was he was maybe too young sometimes at Castilla. Even in Castilla, he was always the youngest guy. How has his leadership been in a team where he's still one of the very youngest guys?
Yeah, to me, the best sign about his leadership is he's never shy. He demands the ball constantly. If you look at the amount of touches, his heat map, like the amount of time he has the ball at his feet, the amount of key passes he puts out. Like there were games. There was a game a few weeks ago I remember covering where he had 8 key passes. And you look at if his teammates could have finished those really good chances, he would have so many assists. And I'm just glad that people have noticed it, in the sense that this guy was deemed a failed Galactico by one of these publications that I remember, like, not long ago. And so it's just great to see him finally turning a corner.
No, it really is. Well, Kian, I want to thank you for your time and sort of breaking down all the lone players. I know you watch them every week, and you've grown quite fond of some teams you probably thought you never would have. Thank you very much. Where can people find you and keep up to date with how these lone guys are doing?
Sure. Follow me on Twitter at Kianso, and follow managingmadrid.com. We cover all of Real Madrid's players on loan there.
Perfect. And remember, you can follow La Liga Lowdown as well on social media at La Liga Lowdown. Thanks for listening, guys.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.